We're told that in ancient Persian poetry and mysticism, the story of the moth and the candle is a persistent theme. We perhaps know this tale of attraction, love, death, and annihilation. One poem from the 12th century concludes, "Then flew a third moth, drunken with love's desire, folded his wings completely in the fire, holding them all the while amidst the flame, till lost in joy, he one with it became." That from the essay, "The Allegory of the Moths and the Flame" by A.V. Williams Jackson. From the poetic rendering there of dissolving in the divine as destruction in the flame, here to an etymological down-to-earth encounter with moths in Persian culture. We're told that although sophisticated agricultural civilizations prospered in Persia, many written records were systematically destroyed by succeeding regimes up to and including the Islamic conquest. Nevertheless, we can be certain that there was a practical knowledge of insects dating to prehistoric times when beekeeping was practiced and cochineal dyes were used by the Persians. Further, few insects have had as profound an effect on international trade and cultural contact and exchange as the silkworm. Sericulture was introduced to Persia from China at least as early as the Sasanian period and is still an important industry. Silk production in Persia was so well developed and well regarded in the 7th century CE that silk products were even exported to China. The silkworm was domesticated from the wild silk moth. All this we learn from Irenica Online. So when Lahle Mehran developed an installation titled "How to Catch a Moth's Shadow," she was creating a work from her poetic imagination, moth as image, and from her understanding of etymology and the cultural and political reverberations of humans interacting with something as seemingly fragile as a flitting moth, records about which, as we heard, had been destroyed in cultural conquests. All this in a gallery space we're invited to experience and perhaps get a sense that we're part of something larger. Lahle Mehran was born in Iran and emigrated with her family to the U.S. at the age of 10. She received her MFA from Carnegie Mellon University in electronic time-based media. Her work has been shown individually and collaboratively in the U.S. and at international venues in the United Arab Emirates, Taiwan, Brazil, South Korea, as well as MassMoCA, the Massachusetts Museum of Contemporary Art, Carnegie Museum of Art in Pittsburgh, the Georgia Museum of Art, the Andy Warhol Museum, and the Denver Art Museum. Lahle Mehran is a professor and former graduate director in the Emergent Digital Practices Program at the University of Denver. Currently, the Samick Art Museum at Bucknell University in Lewisburg is presenting a solo exhibition by Lahle Mehran titled "Inherent Control Ciphers" through December 3rd. A time-based media installation, this exhibition explores identities, ideologies, allegiances, and the rituals humans perform to sustain them. Her work explores the intersections of art and science, as we have just suggested, descent and exile, and new media, and draws on the visual languages of Middle Eastern and European cultures to create this room-sized, interactive multimedia installation at the Samick. We had a chance to speak by phone with Lahle Mehran about her work and about some of the influences that have shaped her art.
Both of my parents are scientists, and I think one thing I really did learn from them and carry over to art making is the nature of exploration and experimentation. They worked 24/7, whether in the lab or in their mind. They were always discussing their projects. They were doing some cutting-edge stuff at the time, using a gas chromatography machine, which took up a room, and now it like sits on a tabletop, and you can see it in TV shows and things like that. And so I remember, you know, weekends would mean going to the lab, and they would try to make sure I didn't do something really dangerous. or hurt myself or anything like that, but just them troubleshooting and having conversations about how to get the maximum, basically, results from their search was something that, of course, at the time I didn't really think much about. And I did actually continue undergrad into biology, but did take a change at the last minute for fine arts. But it is something that has heavily influenced the way I work.
And if we go back even farther culturally, don't we know about the incredible heritage, the Iranian heritage of astronomers and scientists and mathematicians and creating a visual language that is unparalleled?
It is. It's quite extraordinary. And I think it's one of those things you don't really understand when you're in it. And so having grown up there as a child, I took it for granted. I took all of the amazing visuals and the complex geometry for granted as though that's something that was everywhere all the time.
It's not just a matter of taking what was the old days, a compass and a ruler and creating these geometric forms, but there was so much richness and reverberation to the patterns and forms going to who we are in the universe, right? Placing us in that way.
Exactly. And it is something quite simple in that when I start a new pattern, I do actually sometimes have to go back to a compass and a ruler because it can get overwhelming. I do quickly go to the computer and very much take inspiration from what's already been done. But I do very much, I have to say, I'm in love with the concept of something that can begin so simple and then become so intensely complicated and take so many different forms that clearly connect, but they are unique in their own way.
It's remarkable to see your range, and that's one of the things that's so exciting about exploring with you in this way. It's like this wonderful web you're weaving for us, and then you're asking us to step in and not just look at something that's on the wall and stand back, but you want us to come in and interact with it, right?
Exactly. I think it's really important to twofold. One, to feel that you are welcome in a space that maybe you normally don't go to, or maybe you do see a lot of art, but to feel that you should be there. The other part is it's really important to understand that even if you think that you are absolutely, you know, flawless and don't do anything to harm anyone or any place, that our mere existence makes a difference. And so that's why I tend to gravitate towards a lot of interactive installations, that your mere presence, your mere existence in a space has changed things. And so that for me does impact and hopefully give a sense to the audience of their place in the larger sense of the environment, whether it's, you know, political or even like in a small community.
You didn't say it just then, but there's some sense we might ask about the notions then of the new physics and the new sciences, the butterfly effect and the complexity theory and chaos theory, where it is the flapping of a butterfly's wings across a continent can maybe lead to a storm somewhere else that we may not be aware at all, as you've just suggested, but there is an impact. Are you interested in scientific theories as well?
I am. It's hard not to be so empowered and mesmerized by the things that are going on in science. I do spend a lot of time, probably a little more on the biological sciences, specifically entomology. But this whole concept of, you know, they've just done some new research where if you're watching particles, that they behave differently. And it's just fascinating, and it's beyond my full technical comprehension, but I am absolutely enthralled by the content and concept of what that means in regards to just kind of the general operations of people. And so I find that I do very much look at science, whether it's, you brought up butterflies, and I do. I just got actually done doing research at the Carnegie in Pittsburgh with their incredible Lepidoptera collection and studying moths and butterflies of the Middle East region and just trying to understand what it means to have those ecosystems shift, but also how they are structurally created. There was just an article that came out in Science Magazine that talked about how they're doing solar panels based on the wing structures of those specific insects. So it is pretty remarkable.
And you actually had an installation with moths in the title, and there are all these amazing lights that you were evoking in that. And it was larger than moths, though, because there were other implications and reverberations in that piece.
Exactly. So that piece is called How to Catch a Moth's Shadow. And I do, as much as my work is heavily based in politics and trying to understand our treatment of each other, I am also very much, I would say, interested in combining the poetics and metaphors and symbols. And one thing that Persian culture has done for centuries and continues to do is the use of the narrative in those capacities. And so in that particular piece, there are these large mesh cones that used to actually be used to catch large collections of flying insects. They would just basically poison gas an area and just have them all fall and just like do mass collections and then go back and identify them later. And so that kind of cone mesh collection has to do with, again, the content of what it means that we do mass data collection and then try to parse out what's good or bad later. There are close-ups of butterfly and moth wings in the video projections, but there's also satellite imagery of places that we believe have nuclear weapons. And so there is a constant play in my work, whether it's more formal with the macro, micro vision of things, but it does always come back in the unifying theme of trying to really understand how these synergies and overlaps happen in politics and science and religion.
And you mentioned the Carnegie connection, and you actually have studied in Pittsburgh.
Yes, I completed my Master's of Fine Arts at Carnegie Mellon University. So it was quite wonderful to be able to return so late and to do more research at the Carnegie.
We're on the other end of the state, of course, and you know Bucknell and how lovely Lewisburg is on the Susquehanna. Well, where the radio station is, we're in coal country, anthracite coal country, and I was taken with the fact that you use beautiful blackness of the of what really is coal slag for some of your pattern pieces. And your use of materials is extraordinary because it's everything from video productions to sand and coal slag and whatever it is that seems to help you make those connections for us. What about the use of the sand and the coal slag and the amazing pendulums and the patterns that are forming and changing because we're interacting, for example, in some of the spaces?
You're precisely correct. I do utilize materials that I can have access to, and that basically is almost anything on the planet. I don't believe in having a narrow band for my palette. And I discovered coal slag in creating Entropic Order, and I needed a lot of material, but the material does matter to me. It really does have to have a correlation with my overall content. And so I was trying to figure out what could I do that would basically, I could afford a ton of, and it would be environmentally available and not just, you know, hyper-destructive. And so I kept looking at things, including, you know, I thought, oh, saffron. But, you know, I don't know who on the planet can afford a ton of saffron. You know, it's like more expensive than gold. And so I kept trying to think of things that would be culturally specific, unique, be loaded in content. And so also, you know, having moved to the U.S. and moving to Miami, Florida, I just have a relationship with water and sand just from spending so many formative years there. And sand didn't really just make sense just to have plain sand. And so just literally after doing a lot of research, I came across this material that I was not familiar with. And there's some small kind of stone and sand quarries in Denver. And so I went and I looked at it. And as soon as I looked at it, I knew it was perfect because it does look like sand. It looks like black sand. And there is the sharpness of it in a visual form, as in there's this diamond dust quality to it, which is so beautiful. And then to have this dichotomy of it looks really precious, it looks expensive, it looks like diamond dust, but it's actually coal slag and how it's produced, I thought was really quite important. And so it has become a favorite material of mine. It's now been used in 3 projects, and heavily so. So I don't imagine it's going to go away. It just is something that works really well for my intended contextual as well as visual use.
If you don't mind, take us to the Samick Gallery and the very formal title of the show. It's Inherent Control Ciphers. I don't know that we'd know what to expect.
Thank you. I would love to try to explain the journey of Inherent Control Ciphers. So I was quite excited to be invited by Richard Reinhardt, the director, to exhibit a solo show in the museum. And one of the things is it's a challenging space. It's quite long. It's 72 feet long, and not including like some of the corners. And so I wanted to do something that was going to be immersive, to make sense in this space where they have all kinds of other physical restrictions, as every space does. So we tried other things, discussed them. Richard was interested in some of my other work, but the ceilings were too low and things like that. And so as we were discussing all of this, I was trying to figure out what would work in there. And none of my current pieces would physically actually fit in like the best ways. And so I said, I'd like to create a whole new body of work. And, you know, he was like, okay, awesome. I was like, oh my, now I have to, you know, as I'm teaching full time and doing everything else, just trying to get this in a good place. And so some of the things I've been thinking about obviously are not new to my body of work, whether it's the materials we just discussed, the coal slag, 3D printing, projections, installations, interactivity, but the entire body of the iconography and how one interacts with it is quite new. And so I wanted, when you entered the space, ideally for it to be quiet, as it were. And so there would be this 72-foot wall-to-wall seamless projection that would greet you. And as you start to walk in, these small tulip-looking shields, icons, start to become rather excitable. And they are continuously rotating counterclockwise. And they continue that rotation, but they come closer at you to the point where they become rather agitated and almost 5 feet tall. And they clearly have an orb distance. So they don't come through you like you might in a video game or anything like that. So they stand back, but they are clearly aware of your presence. And so as this is happening, one of the museum docents would give you a very small vessel and direct you to the center black cube. And the center black cube has a lot of black sand in it, which is the coal slag we discussed. And it has quite a heavy metal ladle, which I prefer to call it an implement. And you are instructed to basically pour from this metal implement, which holds exactly 10 grams, into this small vessel, which also holds 10 grams. And that is something you take with you. So being in the piece is not just as a passive observer, but now you have taken part in the ceremony. You have become part of this. You have in some ways taken allegiance or sided with this content. And you get to take part of the artwork home with you, literally. We're not refilling this cube. Once it's empty, it's empty. And so that for me was really important in both looking at history, but also current states of politics and what it means to make decisions on your belief system and how that has repercussions. And so I wanted the audience, again, not just for their physical presence to make these things change, but to take part of this home with them was really critical for me.
You mentioned the counterclockwise movement and our moving through. In one of your other pieces, I remember reading about how the counterclockwise movement evoked, in a certain sense, the theme of pilgrimage, in fact, right? And space in that sense.
Exactly. I find it quite fascinating, I think, to understand that, you know, human beings have been on this planet for a long time, and our understanding of things has been deeper than I think sometimes we give credit to in contemporary history. And so I am quite interested in the counterclockwise movement of these forms. And they do take a slight orbital kind of visual just to kind of let you know that it is endless in this kind of field of kind of army or flowers. And part of the counterclockwise decision has to do with the Earth's rotation. And another is exactly because of the Hajj pilgrimage for Muslims. This particular piece is not referencing the Hajj pilgrimage, but I am fully aware of it. And so this one is more referencing the Earth's rotation, but it is something that I do make note of. And I find it really fascinating because we read in the West the other way, that there is an interest in, and I heard some of the audience folks, the visitors, asking, should they come from the other side? Because they wanted to be in flow with the rotation. And I just found that really interesting because in the Middle East, you actually read the other way. And so that was something I hadn't really thought about specifically, except that it's true in the West, we do very much gravitate to the left to right rather than right to left.
And you are fascinated with space, and you were talking about just then how you were going to work in this particular museum space because of its odd configuration in terms of being so long. And in terms of architecture, I think we sometimes take the spaces we're in for granted, unless we're on an architectural tour. But it sounds like you are acutely conscious of that, and you want to help us be conscious of the space as not just empty space that we fill, but that it's something real.
Definitely, yes. I think you understand my work really profoundly. I am really invested in space. I pay attention to it. I always have. I think part of it has to do with, as a child, we traveled a lot, and so I was always aware of a shifting, whether it was architecture, cultures, even proximity of kind of body level comfort. All these things are something that I'm very aware of and interested in and pay attention to. And so when I look at a space, oftentimes I really am interested in trying to create an artwork that specifically lends itself to making that space part of the dialogue or leveraging the kind of space it is to make my artwork the best it can be. And another component of that is audio. When you go to different places, and you mentioned sometimes, you know, having the opportunity to look at sacred spaces or religious spaces, and the audio in basically mosques and synagogues and churches can often be amazing because of the echo and the way it just travels. And so I'm also always paying attention to that, just listening and trying to understand, as you shift through a space, what it does acoustically as well as how it makes one feel in the space, whether it's meant to make you feel welcome or meant to ensure that you understand that you are not significant in a particular kind of space. And so that is one other reason I added audio to this work, because I wanted you to always, even if you're not necessarily looking up at the videos and you're pouring the sand, but you always hear the audio, and the audio is predominantly soldiers marching kind of left to right channel, so you can kind of hear them around you. So the presence and feel of the space, you know, hopefully is something that you understand and feel in a very visceral way.
You work with young people, and you teach, and you're doing your own work and exploring. What do you think is important about the arts in general for us as we're living in this world that we're living in now? Why are you excited that your students are doing the work that they're doing, and why do you care so much?
I do deeply and sincerely believe that culture is one of the most critical things for human beings. One of the conversations I have with my students, whether it's the undergraduate or graduate students, is we talk about that. Why does it matter? And one of the things I bring up is how in history, and unfortunately even current events, that we destroy someone else's identity, someone else's sense of history through destroying their culture. So whether it's looting the museums or just destroying incredible artifacts. And so I say, if culture doesn't matter, why do that? And so that is one of the first things that happens when one is trying to conquer another society, another people, is you destroy their culture. So I say, now we've established that culture is critical. And so for me, the use of the arts is a way to have conversations about things that are extremely difficult. They are definitely topics that become complicated and oftentimes shut people down or that people become defensive. But in this method, hopefully, of being immersive, of having a visceral understanding of this, we can have really difficult conversations about things that are impacting not just, you know, ourselves and our immediate family, but are really going global, and they do come back to us. And so I think it's absolutely important to be paying attention to this and to be supporting it, to be making it, to be active in this world of culture making and supporting for the sake of prosperity of all of us.
Denver-based Lale Meran, an internationally acclaimed artist, professor of emergent digital practices at the University of Denver, speaking with us about her solo exhibition titled Inherent Control Ciphers at the Samick Art Museum at Bucknell University in Lewisburg, a solo show. The exhibition will run through December 3rd. The museum is closed through Thanksgiving weekend, but will open 1 week from today at noon. For more information, on the web, museum.bucknell.edu, museum.bucknell.edu. And for information and to see some of Lale Meran's work, you can find her website, lalemehran.com, lalemehran.com, or museum.bucknell.edu. The exhibition Inherent Control Ciphers, a solo exhibition of work by Lale Meran at the Samick Art Museum at Bucknell University in Lewisburg through December 3rd. For more information, on the web, museum.bucknell.edu.